Blog Talk Radio.
Come, you masters of war. Here that build the big guns. Here that build the death planes. Here that build all the bombs. Here that hide behind walls. Here that hide behind disks. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain. Like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's the one thing I know. I'm younger than you. That even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon. I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed. And I stand over your grave, and I'm sure that you're dead.
So when you say that you want the U.S. to adhere to international and U.S. laws, that's not very comforting. This is a moral question. Is torture ever justified?
Look, I'm going to say it one more time. If I could, maybe I can be more clear. The instructions went out to our people to adhere to law. That ought to comfort you. We're a nation of law. We adhere to laws. We have laws on the books. You might look at those laws, and that might provide comfort for you. And those were the instructions out of from me to the government.
You have just tuned in to Liquid Radio Live. This is your host, LV. Tonight, we've got Christopher Boland, who is an investigative reporter writing for the American Free Press. He has been a source of numerous original stories on the 9/11 cover-up, and his work has been highly cited and copied. Christopher, are you with us?
I'm here, LV. Can you hear me?
Hi, Christopher. Can hear you loud and clear. How are you this evening?
Good. Just one small correction there in your introduction. I used to write for American Free Press. I'm now completely independent, and I haven't been writing for American Free Press since October 7th of 2006.
Okay, Christopher, thank you for that. Christopher, let's start by you telling the listening audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, I'm from the Chicago area. I traveled extensively before high school, before I finished high school, and after I finished high school. I lived in Europe and the Middle East, and became very exposed to the Israeli-Palestinian question. I lived in Israel and lived in the Middle East, and used to spend winters in Norway, where I did a lot of study on languages and history. And then I came back to the United States when I was about 21, and I studied at the University of California and finished my degree in history with an emphasis on Palestine and Israel. And I was working. You know, I started a family in Europe. My wife is from Europe, and I have two small children who were both born over in Sweden. And then I was back in the United States and living here in Chicago and working for IBM when I got involved with the Spotlight newspaper in Washington, D.C., in the year 2000. And they took me on as a journalist, as an independent contractor it became. And I wrote for them for about 6 years, 6.5 years, as I said, until October 7th of last year. And I happened to have been in with my family passing through New York City on the morning of 2001, September 11th. We were camped out at a hotel not far from New York City when everything happened the next morning. And since that time, I became pretty much involved in the September 11th question, what really happened. And I wrote a great deal of articles, and I at that time I still had faith in the media. I still had faith that the free press in America would get to the truth of what really happened. I didn't think that such a tremendous catastrophe could happen in broad daylight and that the truth wouldn't come out. But I realized very quickly that the truth wasn't going to come out, at least not through the controlled media. And thank God for the internet. I wrote a great deal and shared information with a lot of other people and learned a lot, and that's where we are today. I'm not a member of any organization. I'm an independent journalist, but I do work with Eric Hufschmid in California, who's the author of Painful Questions, and he posts my articles on a website called IamTheWitness.com, where there's a web page devoted to my articles. And I'm
what an extensive.
Go ahead.
Sure, I was going to say, what an extensive list of articles, and some really, really eye-popping articles too. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Christopher.
Well, I was going to say, I'm also an author of a children's book, an ABC Zoo book, but it was a very nicely illustrated book for young children to learn to appreciate letters and art, and that's at my website, bolinbooks.com, And I've done a lot of research into 9/11, but I realized very quickly, I mean, even in the first week, that there were these huge, juicy stories about September 11th that were sitting there like pieces of salmon on a smorgasbord, and nobody was going to pick at them. Nobody was going to touch it, and I didn't understand why. I thought, why is it that I'm the only person who's interested in these huge, juicy bits of evidence? And then I realized that the media and the journalists are instructed not to write about certain things. And if you remember, immediately after September 11th, there were a couple of journalists on the West Coast who were actually fired from their positions because they dared to challenge the official version. Well, I found myself writing in a weekly newspaper, the American Free Press, based in Washington, D.C., where I was really allowed free rein. I could write whatever I thought, and my writings reached an audience of, 10, 20, 30,000 people every week, and a very important crowd, because that newspaper, because of its location, because of its position, is read in the halls of power in Washington, D.C. And
right.
that's where I am.
Christopher, you mentioned these juicy stories. Mm-hmm. What's the most one of the ones that stands out the most to you right now that you could mm-hmm. you could just go into? A lot of
sure.
the listeners tuning in now to Liquid Radio Live. I've done several segments on the whole 9/11 and is it a cover up? Was controlled demolition used, and kind of going into little bits and pieces. So to keep with the flow of the show, whichever story really pops out to you right now, if you could just kind of
right.
go into that and who you spoke with and how the story came about.
Well, I do have to mention the very first article that I wrote after September 11th. That was an article that I wrote. I couldn't go to Washington, and I drove back to the back to Chicago, and I wrote an article based on the article that was written in the Bergen Record in New Jersey, written by Paolo Lima, about these five dancing Israelis who were caught videotaping and celebrating the collapse of the World Trade Center. I mean, one of them, Sivan Kurtzberg, an Israeli fellow who's a Mossad agent, had photographed himself, with the burning Twin Towers behind him, and he was like standing on the van in New Jersey, and he was flicking his lighter, like they do at football matches or to show at a concert that this is, And I wrote an article about this. It came out. I wrote it, I think, on the 20th, or came out on the 20th of September, 2001, and this was an article that reached a national or international audience, that these five dancing Israelis, we call them, who had videotaped themselves celebrating in front of the destroyed towers, were actually Israelis. And I speculated at that time that they are probably, Israeli intelligence, because that's what the indications suggested. And it turned out that, in fact, the two guys that were driving the van and running the show, the Kurtzberg brothers, were indeed known to the FBI and the CIA to have been operatives of the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence. And then the other three guys wound up going on TV when they were finally released after about a few weeks, 10 weeks in detention in Brooklyn. They went back to Israel, and they appeared on a TV show, and they, looked very sheepish and guilty. And one of them said, we come from a country that experiences terror on a daily basis. He said, our purpose was to document the event. And I wrote about that, that quote only came out in November 2001, but, that was a very important story. But as time goes by, I've written a number of stories in which, by making a few phone calls and things, I found information that was really crucial. The one that is most recent and I think of great importance is the discovery that there was molten metal found in the basements of the World Trade Center in the molten state when the excavators, when the demolition guys, the guys that were removing all the debris from the World Trade Center, when they got down to the bedrock of Manhattan, they found literally molten steel, in their words, not mine. And it turns out that, in fact, they had discovered in the basements of Towers 1 and 2, the Twin Towers, and Building 7, the 47-story building that belonged to Larry Silverstein, they found molten steel in the molten state. I wrote that in the summer of 2002, and about a year ago, or about a year and a half ago, Professor Jones at BYU corresponded with me, was very interested in that. He wanted to know the details. I provided them to him. And then last spring, I went out and saw Professor Jones, and saw his research, and he's a person, a very knowledgeable physicist with high credentials, and he verified that, in fact, the fragments that he had analyzed were molten iron with some trace elements in there, and that this was a product of a thermite reaction. And then I went out to California and met with Professor Cahill, who had studied the plumes of smoke that came from the World Trade Center from October 2nd until Christmas of that year, 2001. And what he found was that the smoke that was rising from the pile, what they call, ground zero, was primarily particles in the nano-size range. That is, particles that are so small, they're smaller than one-tenth of a micron in diameter. And I asked him, Professor Cahill, what could produce these particles? And he says, only one thing, temperatures at or above the boiling point of the metal involved. So you see, these two professors working, one in Provo, one in Davis, California, their evidence in two different fields, one in aerosols and one in molten metal and physics, they corroborate each other's conclusions. Although Professor Jones has been more outspoken and has been, taken down for what he said, that these fires beneath the World Trade Center that raged for months were hotter than the boiling point of iron. So clearly there was something, much more exotic involved in the destruction of the World Trade Center than kerosene from a jet plane.
Which is basically the jet fuel, and it's not going to burn that hot, so for that long.
Right. There's no way that the hydrocarbon fuel, or the fuel that was in the building itself, or the potential energy of the building, there's no way that that could produce hot spots where steel boiled. And this is the thing, is that, there's an abundance of evidence out there. People like Eric Hufschmid and myself and Professor Jones have brought this information to the public over a period of 5 years. There's no question that the evidence is conclusive, that the official version is a pack of lies. But the problem is that we do not reach the mainstream American audience or world audience, because the media is so tightly controlled, the BBC and CNN and all the network media in the United States, and a lot of the alternative media as well, is tightly controlled by people who are involved in the deception. And that's obvious.
Right. It's almost as if it has to get out, almost word of mouth, myself telling my neighbor, telling, this person, and then... On my last show, I had actually gone out. I didn't put it on the show, but I am going to put it on an upcoming show once I have it complete. But I actually went out on the street, and I took a little recorder, and I just talked to your everyday average, individual on the street and asked them a couple questions, and it was amazing the response I got back. I can't begin to tell you how many people didn't even know there was a third building involved.
Right.
I myself didn't know Christopher, so.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that there's, behind September 11th, there was clearly a war agenda. The agenda was to bring the United States into war in the Middle East. That was the agenda. And it's also very clear that the September 11th attacks were false flag attacks. Those were attacks done by a different agency with the intention of blaming the attacks onto Arabs, Muslims, in order to bring the United States into this war in the Middle East. Now we're engaged in these two disastrous, costly wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Somalia, in other places. And there's a book that I just received in the mail from a local author. His name is Dr. Qasem Khalil. And his book is called Wrongly Blamed, New Information, The Real Truth About 9/11, The London Bombings, and More. And this is very important, because he says on the back, he says, for your own protection, we need to know who the real terrorists are because it isn't over yet. And that is so important because, you see, every day we hear on the news about this bombing in Iraq or that bombing in Iraq. Every morning we wake up and hear there's 50 people killed, 100 people killed. Scores of Iraqis are being killed every single day in these ridiculous bombings that make no sense. You know, that somebody goes into a wedding party, somebody goes into a stream of pilgrims, somebody goes into a cafeteria and blows themselves up, supposedly. This is all false flag terror. This is all terrorism that's being perpetrated by Zionist agents, most likely by the Mossad or the Mossad's agents. In some cases, British intelligence is involved or American intelligence is involved. You know, this happened. They caught these two guys in Basra a few years ago. They caught two SAS officers in Basra who were shooting up the crowd and were driving around a car full of explosives and detonators, dressed up like they were Iraqi Mahdi fighters, like they were fighters from the militia of al-Sadr. And this is what's going on there. This is completely false flag terrorism, and it's being perpetrated for one purpose and one purpose alone. That is to destroy the nation of Iraq and to create it into break it up into fragments like they did to Yugoslavia, statelets, if you will, you know. And this, all of the sectarian violence, or I dare say the great majority of it, massacres, shootings, bombings, are being done by outside forces, not Iraqi forces. Just like 9/11 was not done by Arabs. Go ahead.
Christopher, you have to admit, though, Saddam Hussein was a bad man.
Oh, no question about it. But
it's almost like piecing together. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, he was an agent of the United States, of the CIA for many years. He was, supported and installed. He led that war against Iran with support of the United States government. And as we all know, the United States and Israel were also supporting the Iranians. He was just a player on the chessboard, but he was our player. He was playing with the CIA. He was playing with the Americans, and of course he was a terrible tyrant. That there's no question about it.
It's almost like piecing together a puzzle, a very ugly puzzle, by the way. You, in a lot of your interviews, you've actually done some interviews too, not just articles, you know, written and put in a paper. You've actually done some actual interviews, which the audio clips can actually be accessed through IamTheWitness.com as well.
Right.
You interviewed a lot of eyewitnesses that talked about explosions and those types of that they heard explosions. And,
right.
Of course, you know, the thermite theory comes in. So mm-hmm. any eyewitness that really stands out to you that you could kind of recap for us?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the eyewitnesses who has a great deal to say is William Rodriguez, who was in the basement of the North Tower. He was a janitor. He knew the buildings very well, and he experienced a explosion at 8:46 in the morning, 8:45 in the morning. He was in the basement level 1 of the North Tower, and he and 14 other people experienced an explosion below them before the first plane hit the building. And his testimony is out there. He talks about it. He's very important. But then other people have come forth who worked on different levels of the World Trade Center. I mean, it's a huge place. You know, we're talking about 40, 50,000 people who were familiar with that building. And some people have come forth and talked about what was on the 81st floor of the South Tower, which is very important because this is the floor that the flight known as 175 flew into. And one thing I've learned in the last few months is that both airplanes or drones, whatever they were, that flew into the Twin Towers flew directly into secure computer rooms. I mean, that's important because I contend that the crimes of September 11th were first and foremost computer crimes. The computers were manipulated in the U.S. government, the NORAD computers, the FAA computers, the communications that went between agencies were all manipulated in order to permit and to allow this crime to happen. But furthermore, I think that it's very likely that there were homing devices in those computer rooms that basically were calling to those drones, to those planes, to fly here, come here, so that those planes basically followed into a homing device that was in a computer on the 81st floor and the 95th floor of the North Tower. And that is why those planes were flown with such precision, because you could not trust. There's no way that the people who conspired and planned 9/11, there's no way that they could trust that a pilot would be able to fly that plane at 4 miles an hour, into that building. What if he missed? You know, turn around and come back again? No. You see, it's like they had to be guided, precision-guided missiles is what those planes basically were. And that's why I contend that the noses of those planes went directly into computer rooms, secure computer rooms, because those computers were rigged to call out to the plane. And furthermore, I also contend the evidence suggests that those two computer rooms on the 95th floor of North Tower and the 81st floor of South Tower contained thermite. And that you can see by looking at the images that I've in my articles, you will see from the explosions, the very first explosions that occurred, you will see that there are two different kinds of explosions. There is the explosion of the burning hydrocarbon fuel, which is dark orange with a lot of soot on the edges. And then there is also this very white, almost like exploding cotton bale explosions coming out of the backside or the side of the explosions. And this is not exploding jet fuel. What is it? It looks like it is thermite with barium nitrate in it. That is, that it's creating the whiteness, the aluminum oxides, and for the flame effect, it's got this light orange flame effect, which is probably is produced by the barium nitrate that's been added to the mix.
Wow.
It was a pyrotechnic spectacle that was planned and prepared long in advance.
Christopher, going back to the Israeli connection, did you write an article that spoke about how the Israelis hold keys to NSA and to U.S. government computers and things like that?
Yes, I did. You know,
tell us a little bit about that article.
That came out. You know, I was involved in the 9/11 movement from the beginning, and I went to some of these events back in New York and Washington in 2002. And I remember there was a lady, I think she was a Turkish lady, or Sybil Edmonds, or the other one. I don't remember which one it was. There were two nice-looking ladies that were talking. They were computer experts. And one of them had been a systems analyst or a computer analyst with a company that was involved in the computer security. Her name escapes me for the minute, but she was talking about this little company called P-TECH. And P-TECH, P-T-E-C-H, I think it's Quincy, Massachusetts. And the thrust of her discussion, the thrust of her presentation, I remember I saw it at the Unanswered Questions thing in 2002. I think that was in Washington, D.C., that Kyle Hentz put that on. And she said that this company is being sponsored by Saudi Arabian millionaires. And the funding of this company is very dodgy. This company is tied to the Pakistani intelligence and the Arabs and all that. And yet their security software, computer security software, was on all of these key U.S. computer networks. Well, I checked it out a little bit, and I looked into this P-TECH company, and I think it was in 2003 or so, and I found that while the company was actually founded by a Lebanese Muslim, and it did have some funding from some Saudi guy, the person who was obviously running the company was a guy named Michael Goff, and he's a Jewish fella. He was a lawyer working with a very Zionist law firm in Worcester, Massachusetts. I think that's how you say it. Worcester. And his father was a high-ranking 33rd degree Mason in the B'nai B'rith, and his grandfather had been a 33rd degree Mason in the B'nai B'rith, and this guy had worked as a lawyer with a very solid Zionist law firm until about a year before 9/11, or a couple years before 9/11, and then he suddenly quit working as a lawyer in his hometown and put himself on the market and wound up working for this little Lebanese Arab computer software company called PTEC. And I spoke to Michael Goff and I said, why did you do that? And how did that happen? And I asked him, how did you wind up getting the job with this company? And he said, through an agency. And I asked him, well, what agency was it, you know? And he couldn't give me the name of the agency. So what I'm depicting here is that this is the key man. This is the Mossad Sayan. This is the American Jew who is doing the work for the Israeli intelligence. He was in charge of the product. He was in charge of developing the product. He was in charge of acquiring all the software that this company sold. He was in charge of marketing. He was in charge of training the personnel, et cetera, et cetera. So this guy was the person. And furthermore, after 9/11, his little public relations company they had with his wife had as one of their clients a Mossad firm. One of their key clients was a Mossad company. So he was working for Mossad companies afterwards, and I suspect he was working for Mossad before. Now, the thing is that this PTEC software, created or supposedly created by a Lebanese Muslim out of Quincy, Massachusetts, wound up being loaded onto every single, critical computer network in the United States government and military and law enforcement. The FBI, the CIA, the FAA, NORAD, the Air Force, the White House, everybody had PTEC software, thanks to Michael Goff, thanks to his connections. You see, and this is, whether it was Sybil Edmonds or the other woman, she said that prior to, in the year prior to 9/11, the PTEC specialist had been in the basement of the FAA working on the interoperability issues between NORAD and FAA in the case of an emergency. Now, that's exactly what happened. We had an emergency on September 11th, and the computer communications between FAA and NORAD obviously failed.
Wow.
And that's why the NORAD fighters didn't get to New York City. That's why the NORAD defenses failed, because they were given the wrong messages.
I found that article very, very interesting, and that's why I wanted you to go into a little bit of explanation for me on it. Christopher, we're going to take a quick break for just a moment. If you can stay online with me.
Sure.
Want to get back to you as quickly as we can here. Going to go into a quick break here on Liquid Radio Live, and in my musician spotlight tonight, we've got Tanya Marie. She is a local musician in the Knoxville, Tennessee area, and you can check her music out at www.broadjam.com. You can also take a look at Tanya Marie and her music at myspace.com/TanyaMarie39. I'm going to play a song here by Tanya Marie. It's called Hope, Faith, and Plan.
Raise myself from my bed. I walk to the refrigerator and I only had enough for one day. Jobs. but still she hangs on, and she lives her life on.
You've been listening to Tanya Marie. She can, again, her music can be, you can check out her music again at www.broadjam.com. We are speaking with Christopher Bolin, and we're going to be back on with Christopher in just a, actually, Christopher, are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear
me? Fantastic. Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Christopher, we were there talking. I want to put out the call-in number real quick. Anybody that's out there is listening, got a question for Christopher Bolin concerning 9/11 and the cover-up of 9/11, give us a call here at 646-915-8503. Again, that's 646-915-8503. You can call in and ask a question of Christopher. Christopher, we had left off there just before the song. We were talking about Israeli connection. Let me just ask you this question. And in a lot of my research on 9/11 and the several shows that I've done in the past concerning 9/11, in your investigative reports, and in all the time and effort and energy that you've put into investigating 9/11 and looking into this, mm-hmm. who ultimately would you say, can you say, is at the top of this 9/11 cover-up? It sounds like it's a bigger deal than what any of us can even imagine, and it's almost overwhelming to actually think about it.
Well, it's a very good question. And CNN tried to ask me the same question, and I knew what they wanted to hear. But it is I can tell you, it is in fact an unsolved crime. I mean, in that sense, it's not been solved. But the indications do all point to Israeli involvement, the Israeli intelligence being very, very much involved at the what we call the architectural level. That is to say, people like Benjamin Netanyahu, who has an institute about terrorism in Israel, the Jonathan Institute, and that the people who planned this and who perpetrated it are very strongly connected to the state of Israel. And that, you know, I have brought forth hundreds or scores of articles showing these connections. Whether it's the computer security, whether it's the explosions of the building, whether it's the dancing Israelis, whether it's, you know, people like Ariel Sharon. And Israelis have now gotten what they wanted. They have the United States engaged in a hot war in the Middle East. That is on their eastern flank. The United States is now occupying the greatest enemy of the state of Israel, and that is Iraq. And we're just short of getting into a shooting war with Iran. And this is exactly what the Israelis have always wanted and always needed. They needed to bring the United States in to neutralize their enemies and to occupy the region, because the Israelis intend to expand their borders and to expand their control, their hegemony in the region. And that's what the United States is allowing to happen. Now, you have to remember that while the United States and Britain are the number one and two powers in Iraq, there is a third power that's not even discussed, and that is the Israeli intelligence. And it is the Israeli intelligence who is very much involved in these false flag terror attacks that are happening on a daily basis, and these massacres and the videotapes of the massacres, what have you. This is classic Israeli false flag terror, and the purpose is to fragment, to balkanize Iraq into statelets, which is the master plan, the Israeli Zionist master plan for the entire region.
Amazing. I'm almost speechless. So you're saying at the top of the list, we need to look at Israel.
There's no question about it. You have at the time, you have Dov Zechaim, the Rabbi Dov Zechaim, running the and the comptroller position at the Pentagon, and people like George Bush and Dick Cheney are basically either useful idiots or complicit accomplices in this crime. I mean, we can hold them responsible for their failure to initiate immediately a blue ribbon independent investigation of what happened on September 11th. Remember, they came out and told CNN that the United States could not investigate the mass murder of 3,000 people in New York City and the Pentagon, because that would take away resources from the war in Afghanistan. I mean, that was such rubbish. I can't believe that the American people didn't pick up their pitchforks and go to the Washington, D.C. But Americans are so lulled and complacent by the controlled media, they didn't do anything. But I mean,
evidence is disappearing every day.
The evidence was destroyed from the beginning.
It got hauled off quicker than you can imagine, you know, right after 9/11, and so it's disappearing every day. What really role does the Bush administration play in this, as pawns or?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because, you know, the Bush administration and the Bush family have not always seen eye to eye with the Zionists. You remember Papa Bush had a hard time when he refused to give the $10 billion to the Israelis in, I think it was 1992, for the settlement activity on the West Bank. But, you know, the both parties in this country, the Republican and the Democratic Party, are completely controlled by Zionist forces. You know, you have the caucus leader for the Democrat Party is Rahm Emanuel from Chicago, whose father was in the Irgun. And Dov Zakheim's father was also in the Irgun and the Beitar. Lou Eisenberg, who's in charge of the money for the Republican National Committee, was the former director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey and oversaw the privatization of the Twin Towers. I mean, both powers, both parties in this country are completely controlled. So the idea that there's any wiggling room among the politicians. There's not a politician in this country who can stand up against the Zionist agenda. If they do, they're killed. And the best example was Paul Wellstone, who was a good Jewish politician from Minnesota, a senator, and he was killed because of his opposition, to the war in Iraq and the Patriot Act. He was killed.
How was he killed?
Well, his airplane was obviously, he was flying into an airport in northern Minnesota, and his plane was obviously manipulated. On approach, it suddenly veered off to the right and crashed into the woods. And what's most interesting, what I learned, is that the FBI agents were on their way to the crash site before the plane even crashed. And, I mean, the Paul Wellstone was a political killing, very much the same way that, you know, the young John Kennedy, his plane, now it's in the tabloids at the press stands in the supermarkets. John Kennedy Jr. was killed also for the same reason. They kill those who oppose them in the political arena, and those who would challenge them are killed, are nipped in the bud.
It almost sounds like we don't have control of our own country.
That's right. You know, those people that go around with the Zionist occupied government bumper stickers are a few steps ahead of us. It's absolutely right. And it's amazing because how this has been done, but primarily it's done, my thinking is it's done by centralization of power. And they in this country, over the last 20, 30 years, they've centralized so much power in the office of the president that if you control the president, you control the country. Like if you control the Tsar of Russia, you control Russia. And if you control the European Commission or the European Commissioners, you control the European Union. It's the world is becoming more and more centralized, created, you know, in these blocks, in these huge blocks, European Union, Soviet Russia, United States, that you only have to control a few people at the top and the media, and you control the entire ball of wax.
You've even received some heat on your you know, articles that you've written on 9/11 and everything. You were, if it's okay if we go into this subject,
yeah,
you experienced some harassment and even a beating at your home. Was it by undercover cops? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's right. Last August 15th. You know, I grew up in this little village outside of Chicago. It's not so small anymore. And, you know, my family moved here in 1957, and I'm pretty familiar with what goes on around here. And I saw this car with these three heavily armed guys prowling around my house, you know, in the evening of August 14th. And then I saw them again in front of my house on August 15th. And when I saw these guys in front of my house with a bunch of kids playing in the yard, I became very concerned. So I told my wife, and I called 911, which is the only number we have here for calling the police. And I said, I'm very concerned. There's this car with obviously heavily armed guys wearing body armor, and they're going around my house, you know, now for two nights in a row. Well, what did the local police do? They sent this car to my house. And within 1 minute of their arriving at my house, I had been thrown on the yard, handcuffed, and tasered, simply because I asked them who they were and what they wanted. And these were three unidentified, unarmed, heavily armed men that came up my yard and did refuse to identify themselves, refused to explain what their purpose was on my property, and did not say that they had responded to my 911 call. What's interesting is there were, I think, six police vehicles that were also sent to my house, and these vehicles all kept themselves at some distance and observed the entire attack. And, you know, they put me down on the ground, they threw me on the ground, they fractured my right arm, my right elbow, and they had me in handcuffs. And then they had me on the ground, one guy was kneeling on my head with his full body weight, 200 pounds, kneeling on the side of my head. My wife said my face turned purple and my eyes were bulging out. And then they stuck this taser gun right over my back, and they let me have it with 50,000 volts. Yeah, it's not quite the America I grew up in. And the thing is that, of course, what they do after they do something like this, they have to charge you. they have to charge you. Because, of course, the first thing that you would do is charge them, which is, you know, what I should do. But I have been charged with resisting arrest and aggravated assault against a peace officer. And I've been fighting these, and now I've asked for a jury trial. I got rid of the bad lawyer that I had who was only working with the police, and I found out that the police had conspired to do this, that they had told the 9/11 dispatch, for example, that there was a fight at my house 3 minutes before they even got here. So there's a conspiracy. The real question is, who's behind it? And I hope that if we have a jury trial and if we have good interrogation of these police, we may find out who's really behind this. Because if the federal government or if Homeland Security and Michael Chertoff or the Anti-Defamation League are behind the abuse of the American police, local police, to attack what we would call dissidents or 9/11 researchers, then we're in a heck of a lot of trouble in this country. And I got to raise another $3,000 to pay for this lawyer in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So if people go to imthewitness.com and go to my webpage, they can read at the very top, they can read, there's a whole bunch of articles about my court appearance yesterday, and if they would like to donate to this worthy cause, they can do so through imthewitness.com.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. Christopher, we're running out of time, unfortunately, mm-hmm. with the show. Want to close out the show with just a couple more questions. Do you ever see the truth really just coming out full force? Do you see maybe?
Yes, yes. Whether we're going to wake up tomorrow and the truth will shine from every corner, I don't know about that. But the truth will prevail. You know, I'm a Christian. And I believe in the truth, and that is why I spent 6 years of my life writing for the American Free Press at a very low salary with very little rewards, because I think that it is important, it is essential that the American people get the truth. And currently they only get the truth through the alternative media, through programs like yours, and through independent writers like myself. And Eric Hoofschmidt, because the controlled media in this country is in cahoots with the deception. That has to be understood. CNN and BBC and ABC, these organizations are all working together to lie and to continue the deception. And that's why, we're in such a pickle that we are. But, you know, serving the truth is the only thing to do. And that's the only way that we can get, but it's going to come out little by little. It takes time. But eventually the truth will out. Shakespeare said that. Truth cannot be, murder cannot be hidden forever. The truth will out.
Well, as I stated earlier, in just the research that I've done on it, it's almost as if the information that's out there is so overwhelming. It's like putting together a very big puzzle. If you had to give out one little bit of something to the listening audience tonight who may have just tuned in first time for the show and not caught my previous shows concerning 9/11, and they really don't know what's going on. They just, remember 9/11 for what we mostly saw in, the corporate media. What would you put out there for those listeners, but what would you say to direct them, to guide them to where they may be able to, other than the websites we've given out and whatnot, what would you say to them, Christopher?
Well, I would say that they have to understand that, like Andreas von Bülow told me in December of 2001, that 95% of the work of intelligence agencies around the world is disinformation and deception. And this is disinformation and deception that's mostly aimed at its own population. And that is that we are living in Truman's world. We are living in a mirage where we think we are told one thing. We're told a pack of lies, basically. And I agree completely with the author of Wrongly Blamed, who says that the Zionists are behind all of these attacks. London bombings, he does an excellent job on the London bombings. But that is that for our own protection, because our kids are over there in Iraq and Afghanistan, We do need to know who the real terrorists are. We have to get to the bottom of this. We have to understand who did 9/11, who did the London bombings, you know. And in that way, we can protect ourselves because this isn't over yet. The bad guys are running our country, and they're using our young men and women as cannon fodder. You know, literally, this country's being destroyed by a gang of robbers, if you will, who have taken control of our government. We're living in a very critical time, and the people need to understand what's really going on, and it's not what the New York Times is telling you.
It almost sounds like a script for a movie, and we've seen movies, you know, where, you know, people are basically living in a mirage. I mean, you have movies like The Matrix, not that, you know, that's the government that's running it. It's basically computers, you know, machines. But you see that in the movies, and it just sounds like a really, really...
mm-hmm. Well, the media constantly tells us that we're the best country in the world, and we have the best standard of living, and everything is just wonderful and peachy here. And they're lying to us, you know. They're cheating us. They're lying to us, and they're deceiving us. And you know, this is the mainstream media that had prior knowledge of September 11th. They had, obviously, the BBC had prior knowledge that Building 7 was going to come down. CNN had prior knowledge. And these are the people. These mainstream media outlets refuse to address the unanswered questions of September 11th. I mean, primarily, the explosions, all the explosions that were seen and heard going off before the buildings fell down and during the collapse of the buildings, they still refuse to address that evidence. So the media, the mainstream media, is part of the deception. And that is how they control this great nation of 300 million people.
Christopher, you'll keep writing your articles.
I'll try. I'll do the best I can.
Let's give out that website contact information again.
Sure.
And anybody that wants to help, they can certainly get to it.
I'll tell them. It's www.iamthewitness.com, all one word. And if you go there, on the left side of the page, halfway down, it says Chris Bolin. That's my name, Bolin. Chris Bolin. Click on that. Goes to my webpage. It's got some nice blossoms coming up through the snow. And you scroll down, you'll see there's about 60 articles of mine, the recent articles about September 11th. At the very top is about my legal predicament that I'm in right now. And if they click on those articles, they can see how they can help to support my writing, because I am currently doing all of this pro bono. I'm not getting paid. I don't work for American Free Press. And I am in a legal quagmire, but I think that it is of the utmost importance that this police conspiracy with the federal government to silence a journalist, to harass and silence a journalist like myself, we really have to expose what's going on here. I don't want to be a sacrificial lamb. I don't want to be a martyr, but I want to fight this, and that's what I'm going to do. But I do desperately need some contributions to come in the coming weeks, because I have to pay this lawyer to help defend me. I finally found a good lawyer. And we're gonna fight this. And my court date is now been postponed to April 10th.
Well, Christopher, I hope all that goes in your favor, and going to keep in touch with you concerning that. Maybe would like to have you on the show in the future. You've given us a few more pieces to this very, very amazing, complex puzzle. You know, learning something new every day with it, and it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you, LV. I appreciate it.
Christopher, I want you to have a good evening.
You too. Good night.
Thank you. You've been listening to Liquid Radio Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to leave you with a song. This is a 9/11 tribute. It's an Attack mix by Eric Lambert.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack.
We want to tell you what we know as we know it, but we just got a report in that there's been some sort of explosion.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
It just blew up. A big explosion. People started running. It was just chaos everywhere. There's people jumping out of windows.
It seemed like it wasn't even real.
Okay, there's been an explosion of some kind that shook the grounds of the Capitol.
Another United airliner with 45 people on board has crashed south of Pittsburgh.
Two planes. First, one flew into one tower of the Twin Towers, then a second.
Another building has gone up.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
The Twin Towers has collapsed.
The entire top of the building just collapsed.
This may be one of the worst tragedies ever to strike this country.
Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world.
Terrorism against our nation will not stand. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared.
We will leave no stone unturned in our quest to help find those responsible and to bring those individuals to justice.
We want to hunt them down in any dark corner, in any hiding place on this earth. We want to be relentless.
Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible.
This is an enemy that tries to hide, but it won't be able to hide forever. This is an enemy that thinks its harbors are safe. But they won't be safe forever.
The resolve of our great nation is being tested. But make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test.